everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Mick and Sylvie Avery.
I'm Sylvie Avery and welcome to Spirit's Work, where we bring you interdimensional communication between our world and the spirit world. And this week's show is going to be another chance to join us with a question if you would like to, a general question. It's not a reading style show, but any other sort of question that everybody can benefit from, and we'd love to hear from you. And it's free phone in the USA. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's 001-530-876-3222. Mick crackling away there. And here's Mick.
Well, hi everyone. I don't know if your microphone's right, if it's on or whatever. Doesn't seem to be doing very much.
Okay.
You want to try it out?
Okay. What do you want me to do? Sorry about this, everybody.
Well, just make sure that it's turned on.
Yes, it is on.
With. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Doesn't seem to be doing much.
Okay. Well, I'm sure the studio will let us know if there's any problems.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, well, hi, everyone. I'm Mick Avery. If you'd like to know more about us, maybe book an Akashic reading, we suggest you go visit our website, which is at www.spirit-teaching.com. On Spirit's Work, live on the show, we go across the divide between the physical world and the spirit world and discuss all kinds of things, not only metaphysical, but normal, everyday situations that affect us all and our planet. I am a deep trance medium, and live on the show, I channel our resident spirit expert, Gregory Hay. When I'm in trance, I don't have any awareness of what is going on, but with the help of the spirit world, I have developed a method of being able to have a kind of instant out-of-body experience, which enables me to lend my physical body to the spirit communicator to use in a very pure way. And without further ado, I'm going to say goodbye for now and leave the rest of the show up to Sylvie and the spirit team who work with us. Thanks very much. Bye.
Absolutely. Mick's spirit and his consciousness are taken to the spirit world, and he won't know of anything that has happened until he comes back into his body at the end of the show. Very shortly, Gregory Hay will be joining us, and he is the spokesperson for an enlightened group of spirits called the White Cloud Group. And they're called the White Cloud Group because of White Cloud, who is the shining one of the group. And he has brought together many great minds to form this educational collection of minds, so that we can have access to as much knowledge and information that we need to know in order that we may benefit ourselves, our Earth, and everyone on it. So, you know, finding out about the nature of our existence and being inspired into making a positive difference is, I think, all good stuff. And again, if you would like to know more, please go to our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com. And I'd just like to say that if you did want a reading, like I said, this isn't a reading style show, even though you can phone in and speak to Spirit Gregory and ask him a question. We like it to be general because, you know, it affects everybody and we can all learn from each other's questions, as we always do, and like we do when we observe each other every day. We learn as we do that. So that's the idea of the show. But you can have a private reading with Gregory. Obviously, that we do telephone calls anywhere in the world. And our Akashic readings are absolutely amazing, if I say so myself. It's Spirit Gregory that will give you the reading. So you will have a full hour or whichever reading it is that you pick to interact with Spirit Gregory, and he can find out things about your soul group and your spiritual pathway, your gifts, and who walked with you. And it's just wonderful things about you and your energy. So you can get in touch with us again on our website, www.spirit-teaching.com. Go to the Akashic Readings page, And you can find out things there, and you can email me at enq@spirit-teaching.com if you want to find out more about it. It's quite self-explanatory on the site, I think, but sometimes I can help you if you want to know a little bit more. And also for this show, what we say is, if you want to email me in the week sometime, and I will put a question to Gregory on your behalf on the show, like I've got a load of questions today, and then you can do that, and it can be as many questions as you like. It can be a whole show idea if you want. I mean, this is what it's all about. So you can do that, and I look forward to hearing from you. But meanwhile, Spirit Gregory is here.
Hello, dear friend. With love and light, blessings as ever.
Thank you.
Hello, greetings, everyone.
So, like I say, I do have questions here, but do you have something you'd like to say? Usually you start us off with something that the Spirit team have been pondering over.
Well, my dear friend, really, it is about that we needed to finish up about the matters of animal behavior, that is, human behavior of animals. That's what human beings are, animals, and their reactions to animals around them. So this is really to do with captured animals in your environment and how you therefore treat them. We are taking this into account of both horses, cows, goats, sheep, regardless of what it is, cats, dogs. Thankfully, human beings have not taken into bullfighting as literally as it would seem in Spain, so that, for example, there are not the situations yet where farmers pit one another's bulls against one another. Or some such arenic views.
Wrong kind of bull, I think.
Yes, quite so. So, but my point really is that we note that continually as the spiral of life appears to ebb, which is what it is appearing to do at this present time, because of the intensive negativity on your side of life and the extreme raft of excuses that are continually being broadcast, in a sense, of why people should still allow the things that they did yesterday, which were negative and bad, to continue today into negative and bad, to create a worse future. That's part of, I suppose, the way that human beings really need to get a grip of themselves and their lives. Not to use excuses of other people's behavior, citing other people, so therefore it means that it's all right for them to do it too. It's a bit like people who will no doubt raise serious questions about any objections, for example, to do with the mass culling or whatever, however you would describe that, of whales and dolphins. And the captured state of it, the barbaric ways of slaughter of them, and actually then to go and feed them to children, that it's somehow barbaric for someone else to criticize that and say that it's a negative act.
Yes, we talked about this, didn't we, a few weeks back?
Yes.
And I do believe that we had somebody saying that, well, it's, you know, it's a cultural thing. And that, you know, we animals that other cultures wouldn't eat. So how do you differentiate?
I understand that. The simple way of differentiation is that if you are looking at ways in which Western culture deals with the culture of cows, for example, eating beef and that kind of thing, what's actually happening is that the way of their dispatch is supposed to be relatively quick and as quick as possible and as painless as possible. Does that make it any better? Well, I suppose, my dear friends, if you were really wanting to become an totally enlightened being, then you wouldn't be even having this conversation and you would be actually abstaining from meat completely or in fact the eating of all living things. So that means to say that it brings into question how you eat carrots or peel them. My point, I'm not being flippant, my point really is that if you are trying to make the same parity with how modern Western civilization dispatches, breeds and then dispatches captured cows or cattle, regardless of what type that is, or sheep or whatever, you cannot make the same distinction with rounding up and corralling numerous hundreds and hundreds or even thousands of beings like pilot whales or minke whale or whatever and hacking them to pieces alive. That is not the same situation. That is causing them intense distress because of the fact they have family. Because of that's like saying that you are herding, bringing a lot of cattle in together that are all related, and then just simply attacking them with knives. Is that what you would rather do? So it seems to me that on the one hand, if you are protecting one, which is, for example, Japanese cultures, not just pointing the finger at them. I'm talking about anyone. I'm talking about Norwegians. I'm talking about Swiss, Swedes, Swedish people. I'm talking about Icelandic people, people from the Faroe Islands. All people, in fact, who eat whales en masse in this way and dispatch them in such barbaric ways. So that means to say that it's not that I am doing this because I no longer have a physical body, therefore I do not have to care for it. My point is that I still care for the consciousness of what I had created within my physical life and what I am well aware I will have to continue to try to overcome, not events of intensive negative nature of the like that we're talking about here, but just simple things that I had, which were really, in a sense, just personal misjudgments and that sort of thing, that I still feel actually quite guilty for, even though they were absolutely minuscule, not even, you understand, just the sort of thing like when I was actually protecting a mouse that lived with me in my dwelling. My father knew absolutely nothing about it, and actually had been trying to catch the thing for years.
Oh, it was a wild mouse, but you were feeding it.
Yes, yes, that's right. Yes, and it actually used to live right next to where I slept, on a straw bed.
You slept on the straw bed as well, didn't you?
On the floor, yes. Mm. Mm. Yes, not even in a cot, you see? Mm. So, in that respect, it means that I feel that I made progress simply because I was feeding it. It actually first came in the winter, and I found it, in a sense, at the bottom of the wall of my room. So that is not a part of my life. My father, in a sense, he was a very stout fellow, was a person, yes, who took other animal life, but that was because we had to. And I am not saying that this is then out of the league of possibility, but I am saying that in your time now, in your present situation, you do not have to go and create such barbaric acts. This is not something that you have to do in order to survive. There is plenty of food upon your side of life, on your planet. I understand there are some indigenous peoples who would wish to carry out their traits, carry out their ancestral behavior. I'm well aware of that. Mm. But my point here is that we're not talking about the mass killing of hundreds or even thousands of animals. We are talking in that respect of perhaps one or two. So, as and when the needs arise. If you look at, for example, the Lakota people, the Sioux tribes at this present time, who are literally starving, not because they have a lack of animals to take and eat from the wild, because they actually don't exist where they live. because they'd all been wiped out and made extinct long before. And they are just simply left in their lands, like, for example, the Pine Ridge Reservation, where they lay. And so we had these situations where people live in poverty because they do not have the wild food, as it were, for them to live off the land as they did in ancient times. And yet we have other peoples who actually live in very rich countries. I'm not saying that America is not rich, but actually it has very large pockets of deep poverty all over it. So it means to say that potentially there are peoples within a people that live quite differently to everyone else, that don't drive big cars and that kind of thing, that actually live out of old cars, literally, and don't even have a place to sleep. So this situation is not the same as those who are corralling large numbers of minke whale or pilot whale or whatever they are, in order to then sate something which is actually bogus to begin with, which is actually to put it on sale and to put through the system for children to eat so that they actually get a taste for it. Mm. Not only that, but the meat itself and the beings themselves are highly poisonous and toxic because they're full of mercury, because of all of the pollution that Japan has created in the seas around it. So that means to say then that everything that comes from the Japanese seas around it, and China for that matter, are actually very suspect. Particularly, I have to say, to do with such things as different forms of seaweed and that kind of thing. So you have to be extremely careful as to the nature of where exactly it has come from and what levels of pollution were present at the time at which it was harvested. So there are many different questions to do with that, and the reasons as to why people would complain of what we're saying and talking about, maybe even citing that we're a part of the devil's work or some such thing, is purely and simply because we're saying that change is a must, is a certainty if you are to survive. Change is a must if you wish to not just keep your planet whole and secure, but if you actually want to create the benefit for future generations, and however that is going to become made. It needs to be without animal cruelty.
But you're not actually saying that we should all be vegetarians. You're just saying it's the way it's done, and
that's right.
You know,
yes.
To be discerning about that and be open and honest about why it's happening, really.
That's right. Absolutely so.
And what you're eating, etc. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess things like that go under the radar, don't they? That's
well, that's the point, really, that is tried to make very little of it or light of it as possible, so that it's something that's not seen or not heard of.
Mm. And because every country, I don't care which country it is, we all have something.
That's right.
You know, that we should really be ashamed of. So pointing fingers at other countries is sort of a bit ripe sometimes, and you're sort of coming from the wrong foot, really, aren't you?
Yes, but that's simply, though, because if there are matters to do with your own country in Little Britain, then that will be something that's pointed out as well, exactly as we have done in previous programs when we have cited people who create poor and almost detrimental, totally detrimental behavior to horses and to other animals. Mm. And we have readily cited it. I make no bones about it, and this has nothing to do with nationalism, nothing to do with race. This is purely and simply a matter of conscious livery, a matter of how human beings are supposed to and think they are going to move beyond their past knowing experience.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think it is, you know, there are some wonderful spiritual shifts in consciousness going on. We can't
absolutely
get away from that. That's absolutely fantastic.
Absolutely so.
And I think the unfortunate thing that is in sort of indicative of what you indicative of you, what you were saying is that it's what our children are seeing.
So that's right.
They're getting mixed messages here, and a lot of the time is, well, it's up to them. You know, it's okay for them, so we'll do it. And then it just goes on, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right. So, for example, if you were watching something like the BBC, would you have known anything about the whale program of Japan? No, of course not. Because they don't want to talk about it.
Well, and a lot of the time you turn it off because it's too upsetting. You don't want to see it. That's the thing as well, isn't it?
I understand that too.
I'm, you know, hands up. That's me as well.
Yes.
I do find out about it, and I see, you know, I do keep myself abreast of things.
I do understand. It's just as difficult, my friend Little Bird, as though we were discussing perhaps the nature of dogfighting in Birmingham or Liverpool or Manchester.
Yes.
And the ways in which that has taken a hold simply as a basic sport, like cockfighting of old.
And well, I think as well, you know, the police force are so stretched on other things that
I understand.
You know, these days they can't be everywhere, and I think they turn a blind eye to a lot of things.
I feel well, yes, but also is it not also a matter of how the situation be dealt with once they are caught, or once anything is done about a problem?
That
is another issue, is it not?
That's a classic, that is, I mean...
Yes, it's all right catching them, but not very much good if you don't do anything about it once you've caught them.
Yeah, or something totally pathetic, like, you know, 6 months community service or something. But, yeah, absolutely. So that is the thing, is that it's our children that see these things happening, so how is it going to ever change? But that, like I say, the good thing is that it does come out, like, on YouTube and different things like that now.
Yes, and that is perfect, isn't it?
We didn't, you know, and you get the petitions. Yes. And so to basically just to say to people, you know, don't get just used to seeing these things.
Keep fighting your corner.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
And your thoughts. Yeah. Don't fight with them, but explain them to other people, as what you see is maybe something that no one else has seen.
Yes.
Don't take it for granted that just because you've witnessed something, that it then means that, oh, well, someone else must have seen this, so I won't say anything.
I'm sure somebody else is dealing with that, so I'll let them
get on with it.
Yeah, because get a bit apathetic, don't we?
Sadly so. Not necessarily knowing to do that, but I feel that in many respects what happens is that it becomes a bit of a situation of repetitive behavior. It's like when you get used to doing something that you then perhaps don't see half of your life going past you simply because you're just immersed in what you're doing.
But do you know what I like? It's really not like that. I mean, I was being sarcastic then. That people that actually do go out and do something and fight corners for people, they get labelled as activists.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. So you're an activist if you actually see something that you don't like and then you say something about it. You become an activist. As though it's a derogatory term or a label that people who do not go out and say anything, sitting pretty in their little homes and houses, eating their roast beef and Yorkshire puddings, and nodding quietly in agreement at the numbers of pheasants shot on the next day or whatever, or the number of horses that fell at the last race and had to be destroyed en route. It's a matter of how you actually see the distress that you, each of you, cause within your life to other forms of life.
Whether whoever it is, whether it is a dumb animal, and you know, or people in need, you know, don't. We have to do something, you know.
Yes.
We are humanitarians. We are not activists.
Yes, that's right.
It is people that like to make themselves feel better about not doing something.
That would want to call you an activist.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So, well, thank you for bringing that up again. Yes. Obviously, that's the thing. You see, you are witnessing firsthand these things all of the time, aren't you?
Yes, that is true.
We only hear about it periodically. So
we see them every day.
Yes.
And that's why we had to raise it again, simply because if we don't, it'll go away.
Mm. Absolutely, yes. Because you actually have them come to your side and have to deal...
Yes, with their distress.
With their distress, yes.
Yes, that's right.
Mm. Oh, gosh, yeah. And that's the thing, everybody, you know. We talk about, and we've said this before, but we talk about, you know, being ascended and raising our vibration to the point of, you know, that we want to transcend this world, etc. You know, when you get to the spirit world, you're going to regret that you didn't do more when you're here, and you're just still going to be trying to help, even more so regretting that you didn't do more. And, you know, you're not going to abandon the earth. We're not going to do that. It's all very well saying that. Yes, have a holiday somewhere else or do something else, but you're not going to abandon the earth, so we just as well make the most of it now and not live with the regret of it afterwards, kicking ourselves.
That's quite true.
Mm.
Yes.
So, okay. In the intro, I mentioned about white cloud being a shining one.
Yes.
And it's on our website and everywhere, and we've mentioned shining ones before, and Scott in California... asked about shining ones, and I know we've talked about them, but an awful long time ago. So could you explain what a shining one is, please?
Yes, I will try to. I say try to because they are enigmatic beings. They are beings of multidimensional self. They are beings who, in a sense, help to create the universe in which you find yourselves. That's nothing to do with taking anything away from the physical fabric of life or its evolution. But in many respects, you would see that as different beings and species gradually evolve and change and move away from one another, they are no longer identified in the same soul group or within the same registry, not within the same vibration. Their actions and activities, the way that they create within their lives, will be completely and utterly different as they move and evolve in their own sheer existence. That is the same throughout the universe. And each situation is created and helped to be resolved by those we call the Shining Ones. These are beings who may have had Earth physical life, they may not have. They don't have to have. I suppose oftentimes people might refer to them or might refer to these kinds of energies as ascended masters, but they're not at all. That really tends to be a situation where all beings are in the likeness of humanity. And in actual fact, there are very few beings in the universe who are of the likeness of humanity. In the respect of different soul groups or in the respect of the fabric of human state and humankind and the way that other beings have developed, you may, for example, in the soul group of Equios, you may have different forms of horse who actually come together and that the energy which helped to form that fabric, or one of the energies being a shining one, would have been a being that actually didn't configure in any way, shape or form that of human or horse, but of a completely different kind of fabrical being completely, and actually doesn't have the same registry, temperament or tenant as either the beings that it represents or the soul group that it created. So in other words, we're saying that beings of the Shining One state, they are not in status of themselves. They are not saying that they are knowing that they are in this state of purity. But what happens is they create worlds. They create sound. They create light. They create darkness. They create all different kinds of situations that have identity in the physical fabric of your world. They also create different identities of other fabrics, of other dimensions, of other places. And they are absolutely multifaceted. Now, if, for example, a being who was a shining one brought thought to you, you would probably burst into millions of pieces. Because the energy of a shining one is not very tolerate of human or physical beings. That's just because they're not of the physical nature. So it means to say that they vibrate at such a different frequency that if they turned their attention to you, they would have to be 1,000 miles away. Because the energy which exudes from them is not refined, but of such a different status and makeup. So that means to say that when we talk of the Shining Ones, we are at pains to point out, for example, that as with White Cloud, his energy originated when of physical state, that of many hundreds of years ago. But that his energy was that way before he had a physical life. And when he had a physical life, he was called White Cloud, as was his father before him, as were others after him, but they were not him. I hope you understand. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean to say that they were reincarnations of the same being. Mm-hmm. What it means is that in exactly the same way as Black Elk, David Black Elk, there were altogether about 7 or 8 Black Elks, I understand, all fathers, sons, brothers, or whatever, of different generations of Black Elk. Black Elk is a terminology. White Cloud is a terminology. Red Cloud is a terminology of a family ascendancy. Ascendancy doesn't mean, in the same way that human beings paint, I must be ascended. Ascendancy means ancestry. Different thing. That means to say that beings of the ancient times are not necessarily more wise than people of modern times. And it doesn't mean to say that people of modern times are more wise than people of ancient state. It is just relevant to the time at which they lived. With some beings, such as White Cloud, he actually had a long and very centered life upon the physical world. He was a blood type of Cherokee and Cheyenne. He was both, because he was related to both, as are the whole of the White Cloud family. So that means to say that there were different situations. I understand at some certain points there were Shoshone in there as well, and a bit of Cree mixed in for good measure. I understand that is the same with most ancestral native peoples and bands, apart from, I understand, the Bloods, who were quite different. So when we're looking at the sole purpose of a Shining One, it is to create. That's their purpose. And they do not bear the same kind of situation of harm that physical beings have. They are deeply loving, selflessly so. So that means to say that even if a Shining One thought of you, it would be very painful, or it would be very difficult for you to take. You would never ever have a Shining One in your aura, or be, as I say, any closer than 1,000 miles away, purely and simply because you wouldn't exist in that vibration that was set up. So in a sense, they can be their own worst enemy, purely and simply because the way that their energy is means that they have great and wonderful and beautiful energy, which is tolerable in the spirit world, but not in the physical reality. That doesn't mean to say that, well, what good are they then? It means to say that because they are the creators of the fabric of the universe. So because of that, it means to say that their energy is of a different state to physical life. It doesn't enhance physical life. It enhances the spirit world, which is of a totally different nature and makeup. You could call it, and should really call it, the multiverse, I suppose.
Hmm. So are there shining ones, like you said, that, you know, White Cloud had had a physical life many hundreds of years ago, but he was a shining one?
Yes.
Before?
Yes.
So his energy was changed then to accommodate the Earth?
To accommodate a physical life,
physical
yes.
Life.
Jesus was a shining one. I'm not then saying that they are all the same, so that they're all like Jesus.
No.
His was one life.
Mm.
White Cloud was another life. Buddha was another life.
Yes, the other...
Moses was another life, you see?
Yeah, I think we get the picture. But what about in animal form? You know, are there animals that can be shining ones?
Yes, absolutely so. Yes, that is quite true. There are different animals throughout history who were shining ones. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely so. There have been lions who have been shining ones who actually refuse to eat meat.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they were here, even.
Yes.
Really?
Yes, absolutely so. And they just browsed on bushes.
How interesting.
Yes.
But not recently? Was that?
No, not recently.
Why is that? Is that because it's just because of the negativity on the planet?
Yes. Basically so, yes.
Mm.
Yes. There were others who were, I understand, part of a whale family. There have been others that were part of all different kinds of species, really. And what it actually tended to do was, I suppose that they in turn felt that they had to have some of that physical experience and existence in order to really understand the registry of what was happening to those beings once they returned to our side of life and what they actually felt like.
Hmm. I suppose the thing that people would be thinking was, you know, if they can create worlds and, you know,
Yes. Hey,
look at our world at the moment.
Yes.
Very beautiful, but we're destroying it.
Yes.
And each other.
Yes.
Can they not...
Just come down and fix it all?
Absolutely.
No. No, absolutely not.
Not for any money.
No, not for anything at all. In fact, everyone has to keep away from it because this is up to human beings to fix.
Mm.
And how else is it going to really be mattered if they don't fix it? If it is that human beings actually don't come to their responsibility.
Mm, I suppose it's like having a spoiled child, isn't it? You know, and you
Yes. See
somebody... You know, just keep giving in all the time. You know, to the messes that the child makes and the mayhem
Yes. It's
created.
Yes, my friend, I cite almost anything that you would care to look at throughout your history. Even now, as it continues to roll over, you can see, for example, the way in which people actually stole money from their banks and all the rest of it with their big. Pots of money that they took for themselves.
Mm. Yes.
And still doing. Still
well,
doing
know.
It, so nothing has changed.
I know, but you say in a way, really, that is something that is fairly in the forefront of everybody's, under people's noses, really.
That's
not,
right.
Not
and like, they're still not doing anything about it.
Not like the rainforests and things that we
no.
actually can't see happening. And
yes.
like you say, you know, plundering the oceans and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, to a certain point, though, so nothing's actually going to save the situation except us. So
that's right.
We have to do something about that ourselves.
Yes, no ascended masters are going to come and change everything. No beings from other worlds or whatever.
Mm. You see, I mean, with the oil spill,
Yes.
gosh, it's just dreadful. I mean, I can't even talk about it.
Yes, I know.
But hopefully something will come out of it. Like, you know, if it's happened to this one, then it can happen to others. And we do,
Yes.
we have to.
I feel personally, my dear friend, that one of the situations that has to be resolved is that the American administration actually understand what it is that they have done wrong. In order to allow this, simply because of the loophole that exists within the law, which allowed this platform operation to be done in this way, which actually gave a permit for them not for them to actually escape the kinds of rigors of safety demanded by other platforms or other installations, either on land or in shallow water. They actually took advantage of a loophole that exists in the American government's own administration. So that is the first thing that the American government really needs to look at, not the oil company, but actually the 15 further certificates of, I forget what it is called now, it's something like that they are, they don't have to follow the rules. And they are given a pass, a freedom pass, to do whatever they want. Do you see?
Yeah.
I understand that there are 15 further installations since this present disaster had erupted and exploded that have been passed in the same situation.
Yeah.
So what they need to do is actually look at that and stop it.
Yeah.
Revoke those freedoms that have been passed on to these oil company installations, because the same thing can happen again potentially, and they're all similar installations.
Yes, it's hypothetical. Who owns the company?
It doesn't matter. It's not the part of it.
Where it is, it's just the whole thing. It's
the whole situation.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So and all of it to save money, not the environment.
Yeah.
They don't care about the environment at all.
Everybody's saying, I'd never thought I'd see this in my lifetime, but, you know.
But we have been saying that it would happen.
I know, and I just hope, like I say, some good things have come out of it, you know.
Yes.
I mean, as we say every
ownership. Day. Ownership to stand up and say, oh, yes, that was my fault. I'm very sorry. Let's deal with this and turn it round and make it right.
Mm, okay.
Yes.
All right. So, yes, Shiny Ones create worlds then, Scott, in California. And
everything else.
Yeah.
That's not to take anything else away, as I say, from the creation of all life and the manifestation of evolution.
Hmm. Okay. So another question of his was, if we had never met anyone, if we're in the spirit world before we had a physical life, if we had never met anyone who had had a physical life on Earth, how would that affect us? You know, like...
Well... My dear friend, it would not affect you as a human being at all, purely and simply because you would learn the same as every other human being as to how to action in physical life.
Yes.
That's something which is animalistic and just simply a result of environmental pressure.
No, but I think he's saying that if he never had a physical life and was never going to have a physical life, and he'd never met anybody who had ever had a physical life on Earth, then how would that affect his energy as a spirit being?
Well, he'd be completely pure then.
Okay, so I don't understand this. I don't understand. If we were completely pure before we came here,
yes,
and we knew that the likelihood of being tainted by doing such bad things because of the effect of negativity.
Yes.
I mean, I don't understand why so many of us has had a physical life. It's a gamble, isn't it?
It is, in a sense.
And yet not everybody are, you know, at the forefront of trying to be a spiritual warrior or anything, are they?
No, indeed. There are a lot of couch potatoes. A lot of potatoes.
So what were these people thinking of? That's what I mean. You can understand people, you know, who do want to make a difference, even if it came in later life. I think most people will...
Yes.
Know that they were the person that would run to somebody's aid, that would try to do something reactive in a negative situation if they saw it happening.
Yes, quite so.
And you can understand those people actually saying, no, I'm going to have a go at this. But what about the other people? What were they thinking that they would do then? Because it's a spirit, their spirit energy, we know that their spirit energy, their core energy, is not necessarily going to be of that nature. Well, maybe they are of more of a healing nature.
Well, that's possibly, potentially true. My point, however, is that oftentimes people will behave as their ancestry or as their own upbringing through their environment has dictated, not their spirit. That is why it is that, in a sense, their spirit has a lot of work to do to try to shine through that. And the further thickness and lack of creativity that being creates or exudes within their life means it's more and more difficult for their spirit to come through.
Yes. And you also say that we borrow other beings' consciousness in the spirit world. This is another part of Scott's question.
In a short-term sense, yes.
If we borrow other beings' consciousness to see what it was like, it's almost like getting in their memory, in their thoughts,
right.
In their emotions,
yes.
To experience for a little while.
Yes.
It used to sound far-fetched to me, you know, but when I think of all of these computer games that you have now, yes. And playing tennis in front of a TV screen in the corner of the room, or a guitar or something, it's not really, is it? Do you know what I mean?
I see. Yeah.
Never mind, sorry about that. I was getting a bit geeky then.
It's all right.
Things seem to come true that we used to think maybe were far-fetched. I guess that's what I'm saying. So
yes, that's right.
Could we experience this situation and swap consciousness to experience this with beings from other worlds?
Yes.
But then...
That's right.
Okay, but then you wouldn't necessarily want to have a physical life on that earth.
No, that's right. Absolutely.
Even though many have, probably.
Yes, but it's very, very few out of the entirety of the universe, very, very few beings actually come to have an earth physical life.
Hmm.
Very few actually elect to do that.
Mm.
So it's like a brave warrior that does that, even if that warrior then, once they come to the physical side of life, can't get through the physical shackle that they've been left with for one reason or another. And that may not be something that is actually to do with the being themselves. They may have been imprisoned. They may have been actually given a physical body that was completely mutilated.
The thing is, you see,
genetically,
we do get people that, I mean, their energy is so beautiful, absolutely so beautiful and refined.
Yes.
And then they get, it's a bit like pack animal, isn't it?
Yes.
They get actually turned on. They don't
That's
fit
right.
in.
Oh yes.
They get picked on.
That is true. Yes.
So why does that happen?
That's like the. A beautiful being among the jackals.
Yes.
But what happens to that is purely and simply the way in which, for example, a flock of crows will react to a being who was perhaps born slightly weak or slightly different to the rest.
Yes.
And they react like that because it's a genetic experience. And that's not to say that they're forgiven for it then. Because what you're supposed to do in human civilization is to become civilized and not to react in that way. But if that person had been born then, shall we say, many thousands or hundreds of thousands of years ago, it would have been much that way. But no one would have stopped it, you see?
Because there wasn't so much negativity, you mean?
No, no one would have stopped it because of that kind of pack animal imagery, because they would actually think in concert with it. So that's part of the reason why the whole status of priests and high priests and all of that palaver actually moved in together and that the power base and structure was created that way in order to provide safety for people who thought differently.
But so pack instinct, I mean, what's with that? We're not pack animals, though.
Yes, you are. That's what I'm saying. So human beings are largely, by and large, pack animals. So it means to say that you will have people of one certain registry. Perhaps they are well healed. Perhaps they're people who are born with a silver spoon in one's mouth, and that actually what they do is continue throughout their life in that circle.
Yes.
They don't dare venture into the modernistic world of the lowly being or the serf, purely and simply because they would know that they'd actually get set upon. And that's part of the reason why you have then communities which become ghettoized, which are then entrapment, situations of entrapment, exactly the same as what can happen in any city, Mississippi or on the Mississippi Delta or Texas or wherever it is, you see?
Yes, but I actually didn't...
Anywhere in the world.
I didn't actually think that we were pack animals as such, born as a pack animal.
The ancestral link is, that's why it is that your game of football or cricket is something which illuminates this pack animal animosity. And that's exactly the same way as the whole nationalist experience and the way that racism continues to be rife among human beings.
Yes, I know we do find reasons and ways to be part of a herd and tribalistic and all the rest of it.
And it always makes people feel much safer then. To a certain extent, depending on which side you are.
It scares me thinking about it.
Yes, I understand that, Ben.
Yeah.
I do understand.
So that's interesting.
That's because also, though, my friend, what you're also experiencing are a lot of ancient tribal behaviors, which in a sense only become unearthed when you are experiencing those kinds of tribal revitalizations, which go on with so-called games that are actually pitting the best of one tribal group against the best of another tribal group. That's like David and Goliath fighting in opposition. Yes.
Yeah, I still think we ought to go back to the 60s and the flower power, like our listener...
Fight with daisies.
...the other week. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, peace and love and that sort of thing. So, yeah. So the other thing that he said was... we've got a few minutes left.
Yes, very
about, little bit. Oh no, this was David from Manchester in the UK, sorry. What is the mystical significance of the Star of David?
The mystical significance?
Yeah. I'm just reading it out.
Well,
if there isn't one, there isn't one.
It depends on which side of the mystical fence you are sat, does it not? And whether you believe that's a mystical significance or not.
Well, he's obviously heard that. So.
Yes, it's a matter of the adherent. That's the same as anything else, friend. So this means to say that it is supposed to be the chosen pathway. Don't forget, friend, that in this respect it means that it was originally designated as a part of the sacred triad, if you'd like, the part of the sacred covenant that people, if they had this configuration in their lives, then they would be sacred and sacred of all among men. So that's like everyone else who's outside of that isn't part of the inner circle, isn't part of this great gathering, and that's part of the reason why it is that we always feel that most conditions of religious group hierarchy is to do with this same kind of behavior. Why we try to move people away from it, not because we are demons, but purely and simply because it actually doesn't create love. It creates abandonment and creates different kinds of opposition and like saying this is the only sacred place and everywhere else is not.
Yes, well, without, like, you could go back to my flower power hippie comments, though, couldn't you, really? The peace and love and the communes, because that was open to everybody.
Yes, that's and quite true.
Do you know what I mean?
As long as you didn't bring guns and knives and everything else.
Well, exactly.
I understand that.
Yeah. But it wouldn't. In thinking in that way, there was no color, no race.
That's right.
No religion, no anything.
Nothing.
You know?
Yes. It was just about the emotion and the being together with.
Yes. Absolutely.
And at the end of the day, that is what is really important.
Yeah. Absolutely. few lentils. No, well, we're talking about not eating. I used to like the Hare Krishna tents, and they used to do nice curries.
Yes, I understand that.
No,
yes.
Seriously, though. Yeah, well, you never know. There might be another sort of things go in circles, don't they? And they come round again. And so
yes, that's right.
Something like that might happen.
That
again.
Is very true. We used to have curry in our day. You know.
Didn't.
Yes, we did.
Really?
Yes, curry was actually spices were first of all brought across into Little Britain around between 1100 and 1200 AD.
Wow. Oh, well, we'll talk about that another time.
So it gives you another ideal about takeaway, I suppose. Mm. We actually used to be able to buy, there were some people who used to make pies.
Mm. I don't want to know what went in it.
And they were actually mutton pies, but they were very hot to the tongue.
Wow.
Sometimes you couldn't eat them.
Okay, well,
so
you
hot,
live and you learn. That was over 300 years ago. Folks.
Yes, yes, quite so.
Get your curry here. Okay. Well, thank you, Gregory. Once again, it's been wonderful.
Thank you so with love and light. Blessings as ever, little bird. God bless.
Thank you. And we hope you've enjoyed the show. Do visit our website, www.spirit-teaching.com. My name is Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Work on the wonderful BBS radio. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.